review for those people who weren't here when we began. The first parak of Masechet Beitza is really all about muktzah. It's actually interesting to start out, why is the Masechet called Beitza? Why is the Masechet called Beitza? Right. The first word in the Masechta is Beitza. Now, we know that from all of the, from the part, that's like a Parsha, right? Every Parsha is named for the first, let's say, significant word in the Parsha. Even though that's really not true either, because, we have a Parsha, Eila Toldos Noach, and we have a Parsha, Eila Toldos Yitzchak. So why is Eila Toldos Noach called Noach, but Eila Toldos Yitzchak called Toldos, and not Parshas Yitzchak?
Can't have Toldos twice.
Yeah, but Noach comes first.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So why not that? That should have been Bereshit, Toldot, whatever.
But who made the names of the
Parshas? Chazal, I guess. But they're all based on the first thing, the first word, and in Bereshit Shemot Vayikra, it's also that's what it is. Even though that's also not true, because Bamidbar Eila, it's not right because it's safe for Eila. But even if you say that Eila is kind, even if you say that Eila is kind of a funny word to start. But then, what's Vayikra? How is Vayikra any better than the Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe b'midbar Sinai, right? That's safer b'midbar is via, that could have been safer vayikra, safer vayedaber. No, those were definitely those have different names.
The Parshiot were not by Chazal. The Parshiot were the Christians.
Are the Christians?
Yep, the Christian separations, and so I don't know if the names of the Parshiot were a Chazal interpolation.
No, but we read the Parsha. We read that was our division before the Christians divided. The Christians divided the chapters.
That's what I'm saying.
No, but the names of the Parshas are not.
I'm not
Christian.
Saying the names. I'm just saying the Christians.
No, divide up the chapters.
Yes, right. They did. Right. So I don't know if the names of the Parshiot are a Chazal interpolation.
Onto that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
very easy to look up. Yeah, we will. That's a good question. But in Gemara, it's not like that. Think about the names of the Masechta. What's the, we learned Brachot. What's the beginning of Masechet Brachot?
Meimatai.
It's not called Masechet Meimatai.
Not gonna
that's Chazal.
Right, okay. But what
No, it's after the Mishnah because Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi just had all the Mishnayot and then, sort of was divided up. But that the names of the Masechta were given afterwards. But it's interesting why is this called Beitza and not called Masechet Yom Tov? In the Gemara, a lot of times this is called Masechet Yom Tov. But for whatever reason, colloquially, it became Masechet Beitza. Okay. And it really discusses the whole Masechta is about the differences between Shabbos and Yom Tov. It's not about the laws of Yom Tov as they also apply on Shabbos. That's all in Masechet Shabbos. It's not about the laws of Chol HaMoed. That's Masechet Moed Katan. But it's all about morning. Sorry, the email didn't go out because the Ramah system is down.
What email?
I sent an email yesterday to the class, but it didn't. You'll receive it sometime this afternoon.
The difference between
Shabbos and Yom Tov.
There is class.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the difference is between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Now you might think that it's funny to have that for Muktzah, that Muktzah is really the first chapter, but there are differences between Shabbos and Yom Tov with regards to Muktzah. And we're actually going to get to that probably today or next week. It's in the very beginning of the Masechta. But just a brief overview of Muktzah. I'm going to give myself some notes to make sure I don't miss the kind of Muktzah. There are a lot of different kinds of Muktzah. And there's actually debate among the Tanaim as to how Usser Muktzah really is. The debate is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda has a very, and this is throughout Masechet Shabbos, in Daf Membet to Mem Zayin or so, in Masechet Shabbos, there's Muktzah also. And also over here in Masechet Beitza, Rabbi Yehuda has a very, very stringent, expansive view of Muktzah. And Rabbi Shimon has a much narrower, more lenient view of Muktzah. So much so that the Gemara often says, Rabbi Shimon late lay Muktzah. Rabbi Shimon does not hold of Muktzah. Which is not all, you know, it's not altogether true. He holds of something that's Muktzah. But his Muktzah is just much narrower in scope than Rabbi Yehuda's Muktzah. Of course, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda.
Of course,
mm-hmm. We have a very expansive view of Muktzah. Right. And what's Muktzah? Now, what exactly does Muktzah mean? Let me ask you this. What's the opposite of Muktzah?
Ready.
You're good.
I'm
you learned Beitza.
There are a few things I remember from high school. Ready.
Muchan. There's Muchan and Muktzeh.
Although I've heard it explained slightly differently also, that, well, why don't you...
Muchan means it was prepared for Shabbos. Right. If you thought of it already and you thought that you were going to use it on Shabbos, that's Muchan. Muktzeh literally means cast aside. Right? Muktzeh. All of those things which are set aside not to be used on Shabbos.
So that was the second way of looking at it. Not that it's not ready, but it has no Shabbos purpose.
Right.
It has no Shabbos use.
It is set aside not to be used on Shabbos. I think that's the simple, because the word muktzeh, like katzeh, means in the corner. It's cast aside to the side. So there's muchan and there's muktzeh. There are certain things that everybody agree are muchan. The kiddush cups, the food for Shabbos, you know, the challah, your tal, you know, a talis, a siddur, a chumash. Those are all obviously muchan. And there are certain things which are obviously muktzeh. Those things which have absolutely no use on Shabbos at all. Coins would be one example. You know, money. Money is muktzeh. But that's only one category of muktzeh. That's called muktzeh machamat gufo. Muktzeh because it itself, gufo means its body, it itself has no use on Shabbos whatsoever. It itself is cast aside and is not allowed to be used on Shabbos. Everybody agrees that there are certain things that are muchan and there are certain things that are muktzeh. What people disagree about, what Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon and the other Tanaim and Amoraim disagree about, is the stuff that's in between those things that are obviously muchan and those things that are obviously muktzeh. So, for example, a shechita knife. A knife that a very specialized, expensive, sharp knife that the shochet uses to shecht an animal. That represents another category of muktzeh. Even though you could use it to slice vegetables. And that would be permitted, right? You're allowed to slice vegetables if you want to on Shabbos. Tomatoes, cucumbers, everything. But a specialized shechita knife is called muktzeh mechamat chisaron kis. Chisaron kis means loss of money. If something is so specialized that its owner would not want it used for anything other than its primary function, then it is muktzeh mechamat chisaron kis. The shochet doesn't want you slicing cucumbers with his very special knife. He reserves it only for shechita. And shechita is not allowed on Shabbos. It is allowed on Yom Tov. So on Yom Tov, a shechita knife would not be muktzeh. But on Shabbos, it is.
If he uses it to cut vegetables during the week, if it has to do with chisaron kis.
No, but he doesn't.
But he doesn't. That's the point.
Okay.
For example, if I have a laptop computer, an expensive laptop computer that's, you know, special for movie editing or whatever, I could use that as a doorstop if I wanted to. But I wouldn't, because I spent a lot of money on my laptop. I'm not going to keep it to hold the door. So even though it has other uses, right, that's why a laptop itself is not muktzeh mechamat gufo. It itself has other purposes besides a muktzeh purpose. If it's off, I could use it as a doorstop or as a paperweight.
Okay, but you could say that about money also. The money could be a paperweight. So that's
Could, but money itself is considered, for whatever reason, money itself is muktzah b'chamat gufo. You're right. So there are some poskim that distinguish between cash and banknotes, cash, and coins. They say that coins is definitely muktzah b'chamat gufo, because that's like real money. And banknotes are muktzah b'chamat chisaron kis, because they're just pieces of paper that represent the money. They're not really money.
So there was a question once. I had a necklace that was made for me from the silver dollar, Cuban silver dollar that I was married with, and whether I could wear it on Shabbos.
Oh.
And it was allowed.
Right.
Yeah.
It's allowed because the key with muktza and muhan is that ultimately all these things are subjective. Meaning if I have a bunch of silver dollars, which I don't use as money at all, I don't use them to, you know, as transaction money at all, but rather I use, you know, in my home, I use silver dollars as coasters for shot glasses or you know, yeah, I use them for something else. Then they're not muktza, then they're muhan, because they're, you know, as long as they're...
They have a Shabbos
purpose, and they're not used at all as money. Meaning these are not, as far as I'm concerned, these silver dollars aren't money. They're just silver coasters. So that would be allowed. And the same thing with the necklace. It's now a necklace. It's not money anymore. So that's muktza mechamat gufo and muktza mechamat chisaron kis. Everyone agrees that those two categories are muktza. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon both have those categories. There's one other category that everybody agrees about. And that's huktza lemitzvato. If it's something that's used for a specific mitzvah, and that mitzvah doesn't apply on Shabbos, then the item itself is muktza. That's why a lulav and esrog on Sukkot, your lulav and esrog are muktza. Tefillin on Shabbos.
What's the category?
Huktza lemitzvato. It is set aside, like muktza from the verb huktza lemitzvato. For its mitzvah. It is set aside specifically for use with the mitzvah. And that's like, you know, lulav and esrog on Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos. That's like tefillin. A shofar on Rosh Hashanah.
It's set aside strictly for use on...
For its mitzvah.
For its mitzvah.
Right. Nobody uses their tefillin for anything else besides laying tefillin. It's not... You know, they don't have another common usage. We'll find out if there's, you know, fashion designers that have different ideas, you know, in the future. Talisim have been appropriated as...
Actually, once there was a fashion show...
I know.
Crazy
Man.
Isaac Mizrahi.
No,
the other one. Isaac
Mizrahi.
Yeah, Isaac Mizrahi did it.
The crazy one who said anti-Semitic remarks. No, but...
The Dior, the fellow from Dior.
Right. Yeah. H&M had a talis scarf last year, whatever it was. They had a talis scarf. Okay, that's huktzala mitzvato. Then there's another category.
So these three categories are all agreed upon.
Those three categories are agreed upon by everyone, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. There's a category which there is some debate about called kli shemelachto le'iser. Kli shemelachto le'isur is an object whose normal function is not allowed on Shabbos, but which has a perfectly reasonable function that is allowed on Shabbos. So, for example, a good example is a pen. Many people use their pens as bookmarks. They use their pens as... I'm trying to think what else. You'd use it to stuff, you know, something into a tube. You could use your pen.
A tool.
A tool, yeah. You could use it as a tool for something that's completely permitted on Shabbos. So a kli shemelachto le'iser is also muktza, like a pen is usually muktza, but there are two dispensations. One is that you're allowed to use it letzorech gufo. If you want to use it in a permitted way, you're allowed to. So, for example, on Shabbos, if you like to use your pen as a bookmark, you're allowed to continue using your pen as a bookmark. Because you're not using it in the prohibited fashion, you're using it, letzorech gufo, for itself. And letzorech mekomo. And if you need the place on which it is right now. So, for example, over... You can move it. You don't have to do any shinui if you're moving something that's a klisha melachta lizer. If you're moving real muktzah, like a laptop, which is muktzah mechamat chisaron kis, or muktzah mechamat gufo, like money, then you have to do some shinui, or you have to tilt, you know, the table, or whatever it is. You have to do ni'or. Ni'or means you try to shake it off from whatever it is. But if it's just klisha melachtol iser, you're allowed to just remove it normally, because you need the place. You pick up the pen and put it somewhere else. You don't need to do any fancy shinuim to move a pen.
And everybody agrees on that.
Yeah. However, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda disagree about what is considered such a klisha melachto l'iser. According to Rabbi Shimon, any item that has another possible purpose can be a klisha melachto l'iser. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, who's more stringent, if 99% of the time it's only used for one thing, which is usser, then you can't call it a klisha melachto l'iser like this. Meaning, even though technically it's a klisha melachto l'iser, and you could technically use it for something else, Rabbi Yehuda says that if it's rarely used for something else, then it is it does not fall into this category. It's very subjective.
Right.
Very subjective. A pen, everyone would agree, is a regular klisha melachto l'iser.
Okay, so this is how people go through these gymnastics at these hotels with a magnetic key, that they use it as a bookmark or something, and then they have the guard open it up with their bookmark. I mean,
right.
Because why shouldn't go on these tests?
That's right. I don't think you even need to, I mean, whatever. The hotel key is another question. I don't think you need to use it as a bookmark.
Oh.
Because I don't think the hotel key itself is muktzah. There's no electronic stuff on the mail key. There's a magnetic strip. And the hotel key is simply identification that you are staying at the hotel. Meaning if the lobby...
No, it's the key to open the door.
No, I know what it is, but it also has the hotel's insignia on it. So if, in theory, if the lobby attendants wanted to become strict and not let anybody into the hotel besides guests of the hotel, they could say, please show me your hotel key. Meaning it could be used as evidence that you're staying at the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's why I'm not sure the hotel key itself is muktzah, because there's also no electricity. It's a magnetic strip. It's the door that has the electricity. Okay. So that's klisha melachto l'iser. Then there is another muktzah called muktzah machamat mi'us. Mi'us means something disgusting. So something's disgusting. Rabbi Yehuda says it's muktzah. Rabbi Shimon says it's not. This is another one of those debates between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Mis, exactly. Mis, that's where it comes from. Mis. Something that you would not want to handle because it's gross. Then there's the category of muktzah that became muktzah. That was muktzah at sunset on Friday evening. This is something not everybody knows about. It's called Migo de Itchazik Lebena Shmashot Itchazik Lekula Yoma. Migo de Itchazik, because it became muktzah Bein Hashmashot at sunset, Itchazik Nami Lekula Yoma. It also became muktzah for the rest of Shabbos. For example, there's something called a basis ledavar ha'asur. If I have a silver tray, and on that silver tray are my candlesticks on Shabbos, not on Yom Tov, because on Yom Tov they're not muktzah, but on Shabbos, candlesticks are muktzah, because they're fire. And on Friday evening, those candlesticks are on the silver tray. That silver tray becomes a basis, a base, ledavar ha'asur, to something that is muktzah, to a prohibited object. And therefore, that silver tray now remains muktzah until the end of Shabbos. There's ways out of this. You could, you know, if something is a basis ledavar ha'asur veha mutar, then it's not muktzah. So, for example, if you have a silver tray with candlesticks and the bottle of wine on the silver tray at sunset, because sunset is when this all happens. The magic happens at sunset. So if the bottle of wine is on the tray at sunset, then the tray does not remain muktzeh until the end of Shabbos. If some non-Jew removed the candlesticks, then you'd be allowed to move the tray wherever you'd like. However, in the other scenario, where it was just candlesticks on the tray itself is seen as a base for the candlesticks, and the tray becomes muktzeh. So Rabbi Shimon does not believe in this principle. Rabbi Yehuda does. Rabbi Shimon believes that that either something is muktzeh or it's not, and sunset has nothing to do with it. We paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. Again, we have this principle. So if something is muktzeh at sunset, it remains muktzeh throughout the rest of Shabbos. And finally, there is one more category about which they disagree, which is the category we're going to discuss today. And that is the category of nolad. Nolad is something that did not exist before Shabbos, and it now exists on Shabbos.
The New York Times.
So yeah, we'll discuss newspapers in a moment. But newspapers, the Saturday morning newspaper is a good example. Because that's printed on Shabbos. It did not exist before Shabbos, and here it is, it exists on Shabbos. It could be that the New York Times is permitted on Shabbos. I'll tell you, it's permitted on Shabbos, according to many people. Yeah. It could be, by the way, that the New York Times is permitted on Shabbos, but usur on Yom Tov.
Huh, why?
Explain.
Wow.
I'll explain. Could be that the newspaper is permitted on Shabbos and not permitted on Yom Tov. Usar on Yom Tov. We'll get there. You'll see that Yom Tov and Shabbos are different with regards to muktzah. Okay. Why did the rabbis prohibit muktzah?
So that you shouldn't come close to violating Shabbos.
Okay, so the obvious answer is that it's a siyag. So you wouldn't come close to violating Shabbos.
By
using muktzah. Let's say why can't I move my lamp? I mean, the more common example of nolad that is definitely nolad is, for example, snow that snows on Shabbos. If it snows on Shabbos, the snow is nolad. It didn't exist before Shabbos, and here it is, it exists. You're not allowed to touch the snow. The snow is muktzah.
You can't touch it, but you can walk on it. You have to get from A to B.
Right? You have to get from A to B. What are you going to do?
But how is snow?
It's nolad.
Right.
If it snowed on Thursday, then the snow is not muktzah. But if it snows on Shabbos, then it's muktzah because it's nolad.
But a situation that became, you know, but snow is not muktzah bechlal. I mean,
it's muktzah. It's muktzah if it's muktzah if it if so, anything at all, if it didn't exist before Shabbat, is muktzah. On Shabbat.
But nobody handled it. Nobody printed it. Nobody...
Doesn't matter. It's nolad. Nolad. That's the first Mishnah we're going to read. You'll see. The Mishnah.
The baby that was born, you can touch it.
Good. You have, that's Pikuach Nefesh. No, that's... You're right. The baby is nolad.
That's real nolad.
You'll see. We're going to read in just a minute the Mishnah. First, the reasons for muktzah. This is Masachet Beitzah. We're learning Masachet Beitzah.
Oh, yeah, Beitzah.
Okay. But if a baby is born, then he needs people to care for him. That's Pikuach Nefesh. That's a baby is a Chol Sheyesh Bo Sakana. So all rules, all bets are off. You can light a fire if you have to for the baby. There's no all bets are off for the baby.
So you can't touch the snow.
No touching snow if it snows on Shabbos.
What kind of siyag is that?
That's nolad. That's a kind of muktzah.
But I mean, by touching the snow, how are you going to violate the Shabbat? You carry?
Oh, so maybe muktzah is not just a siyag. Just because Adele, Hani, and Wendy thought that it was a siyag doesn't mean that's the only reason for muktzah. It's a good reason, but it's not the only reason. You'll see the Rambam just on the first page. He gives us the reasons for muktzah. Three reasons he has. Halacha yud bet. Asrucha chamim letaltel. Miktzat dvarim b'shabbat, kederech shehu oseh b'chol. The rabbis prohibited carrying or handling certain items on Shabbos in the same way you would on a weekday. Why did they make such a prohibition? Amru, they said, Uma im hizhiru neviim v'tzivu shelo yihye hiluchacha b'shabbat kehiluchacha b'chol. Because there are psukim in the Navi to the effect of that our ways on Shabbos should not be like our ways during the week. V'lo sichat ha-shabbat kesichat ha-chol. And our speech on Shabbos should not be like our speech during the week. Shne'emar v'daber davar. Because it says, Mimtzocha fatzecha v'daber davar. It's from the first paragraph in Kiddush of Shabbos morning. Im tashiv mishabbat raglecha. Okay. V'kal v'chomer shelo yetiltul b'shabbat ketiltul b'chol. And kal v'chomer, all the more so, that you're handling things on Shabbos should not be like you're handling things on Chol. Kedei shelo yihye keyom chol be'enav. So that you should not view the Shabbos like you view a weekday. By the way, Rav Soloveitchik was very machmir about this Rambam. And according to the Rav, all items were muktzah unless you were using them for a necessary purpose on Shabbos. So, for example, unless you were drinking from the glass on the table, according to Rav Soloveitchik, even the glass on the table is muktzah. Objects are only all, according to Rav, see, I really should have drawn a, you know, there's, it's huge.
Objects are all muktzah unless, is the basic
concept. Right.
You can't take a book unless you want to read it.
That's right. Like that's what Rav Soloveitchik said.
It sounds like anything that you didn't specifically prepare before Shabbos to use on Shabbos. Can't decide to read a book all of a sudden.
No, I think he would say you're allowed to you can decide to read the book, but the book, but unless you're reading the book is muktzah. Meaning you're allowed to read the book on Shabbos, and that's a good thing. You should read books on Shabbos.
Even if you didn't prepare the book before Shabbos?
I think Rav Soloveitchik would say.
That's not what it sounds like from his book. It sounds like...
You think it has to be prepared for beforehand?
In some sense, that's what
it says. Well, it could be that there's a general understanding that all the books on your bookshelf are prepared beforehand.
That would be nice, yeah.
Could be that, right?
You can use it on Shabbos.
Right. All I know is that he was strict about the silverware and plates. If you were not using them at that moment for eating, like I'm sitting at my Friday dinner table, and I have a water glass and a wine glass. If I'm not drinking from the wine glass, if I only have water and I don't have wine, the wine glass is muktzah. Once I pour wine in it and I'm drinking from it, then it's not muktzah anymore. But so long as I'm not using it,
so what if you don't use it for the whole dinner? You can't remove it from the table?
No, then you
have to...
You have
to get the wine. The wine has to be poured for you.
No. You can pour the... Don't take it as like a...
That's why it's very literal.
I don't think it's a literal muktzah thing. I think it's this idea that it's all... Shelo yetiltul b'shabbat ketiltul b'chol. I think it's an idea that he had. And I think that he apparently did this in practice. I don't think that he would... No, because it's still... The glass is not muktzah mechamat. Remember, we have these categories of muktzah. It's not muktzah mechamat gufo. It's at most a klisha melachto
l'isser. Frankly, if it's already on the Shabbos table, it has been given a Shabbos.
That's
table.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Good idea to set the table ahead of time.
Yeah.
My husband kills me because I do it so far ahead of time. Right. It's last Shabbos around.
Shelo yekayom chol be'inav ve'avo lehagbia. Vilatakin ultakin kelim mipina lepina. Because if we didn't do this, then everybody would clean up their house on Shabbos, or they would fix things on Shabbos, you know? So they made everything muktzah. It's muktzah. You can't redecorate your furniture on Shabbos.
Sweeping the floor.
No, that's a different thing. Shlomit. Okay. Sweeping the floor is a necessary Shabbos thing, because otherwise, what are you going to have, dust on the floor over Shabbos?
Some people say, yeah, hey, I don't want to touch the broom.
So I'll tell you.
Maybe some do.
The main point here is that muktzah and mukhan are according to everybody, are very subjective. So for example, there are some people who, during the week, After they eat dinner, they take their dirty plate and they stack it on the sink, and they leave their dirty plate on the sink until they decide at some point later in the week to wash the dishes. What?
Yeah,
I mean, there are a lot of people like this.
Teenagers.
A lot of people like that. So those people, Shlomi,
they had the attitude that they
could do this. Right. For them, it's probably not permitted to wash dishes on Shabbos because they obviously don't care about the dishes being washed. But if somebody, other people, if they finish their dinner, the dish goes right under the sink, it goes into the dishwasher, it gets washed right away. For those people, it's permitted to wash the dishes on Shabbos because that's how you put stuff away. If everything here wasn't subjective, then you wouldn't be allowed to put your suit away. I mean, I come home and I know I'm wearing one suit Friday night and I know I'm going to wear a different suit tomorrow morning. Then why should I be allowed to put this suit away Friday night? Shouldn't I have to leave the suit out? No, because that's the normal way the suit belongs in the closet. So you're allowed to put it back in the closet. That's where it belongs. So too dishes belong in the cupboards or on the drying rack or whatever. And so too dust belongs in the garbage can. We don't want bugs either. You know, you prevent bugs. That depends on the kind of person you are. I remember my grandmother, Zichrono Livracha. The second somebody finished eating off the plate was gone. It was before you even knew it. It was already washed and dried and in the cupboard.
I like her.
That was my grandmother.
We used to joke, hold on to your plate or it's gone.
That's right.
It's true.
I know somebody who said. He goes to the bathroom in the morning.
His bed is made. That's right. We have a rule. You have to say whether you're coming back.
That's very funny.
Otherwise, he gets made. Too bad.
So there are people like that. So for them to say that it's to tell somebody like that they can't wash
their
dishes on Shabbos,
breakdown.
They can't. That would ruin the whole Shabbos for them. Obviously, the dishes have to be washed in a permitted way. You can't use a sponge because that's slita. You have to get a brush. You know, whatever it is, you do. You can wash in a permitted. The mesh thing. You know, the mesh things. Those you can use. Whatever it is, you can wash dishes in a permitted way.
The thing that you're supposed to think differently. Derech that you don't do it during the week. So if during the week you wash dishes, you put them away.
That's good.
It seems to me that on Shabbos you're not allowed to do that.
That's a shita. That could be, but it could be that if you have a nervous breakdown because you have dirty dishes, that overrides that. You can't, there's some people they can't survive. My aunt to this day, my grandmother's mom's sister. My aunt cleans every Thursday like it's Pesach. She has like a little 3-bedroom apartment in Cholon, and she cleans from like the morning until the evening. You know, you're like every chair gets flipped and the bottom of every chair gets cleaned every week like it's Pesach. And she had a thing. The doctor told her she's not allowed to clean anymore. She went through like 25 cleaning ladies. She went through 25 housekeepers that came every week. Forget it. And not the same. She has to do it herself.
My mother used to call it cleaning the keyholes. If you have a need to clean the keyholes, there are some people that never.
She does.
What do you mean, dust the keyholes? If you have a need to clean the keyholes, you're in a different category.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so you see, it's all subjective. If you told my aunt that you had to leave a plate with chicken bones until the end of Shabbos, she wouldn't have it. Okay. Okay. We're almost done with the Rambam, and then we'll get to the Gemara.
Omi bayit labayit
ola tsnia avanim v'chayotze bahen
sharehu.
To put away.
Put away. I just want to make sure.
Put away stones. Sharehu batel v'yoshev beveto. What are they putting away stones for?
Did they throw the stones at the buses?
No, they had. It probably means dust. Dirt. It probably means dirt that came into the house or something to put away the dirt. V'cheyotze bahen, sharehu batel v'yoshev beveto. Because you're sitting at home bored on the long Shabbos afternoon. V'yivakesh devar shiitasek bo, and you want something to do. So why not rearrange the furniture?
So timeless. I mean, really.
V'nimtza shelo shabbat, lo shavat. And he didn't even have a day of rest. Uvitel atam sheneemar b'torah l'man yanuach. And he completely canceled out the whole reason for Shabbos. If there was no muktza, then you'd get bored on Shabbos afternoon, and you'd want something to do, so you'll clean the house, or you'll rearrange the furniture. You'll find something to do. And the rabbis didn't want us to do that. What? The ode?
You have the urge to clean?
No.
They're
bored.
But, you know, like, when it's a minhag not to do laundry?
It's a halacha not to do laundry, yeah.
I find it horrible.
Really?
It's very hard.
Piles of laundry for a week?
So no, you could do baby laundry and stuff like that.
Why aren't you allowed to?
No babies. Because it's one of the. There are two malachas. Well, we could have learned Moed Katan instead of Beitza. I'll do Moed Katan next time. But there in general, there's a prohibition of malacha on Chol HaMoed. There are two malachot which are really prohibited more seriously, so much so that they have their own separate chapters in the Shulchan Aruch. Those two malachot are haircuts and laundry. Haircuts and laundry are in a different category in Chol HaMoed.
That assumes you cut your own hair?
What?
It's a malach if you cut your own
hair. No,
if
even
somebody
going
cuts it for you, it's not...
No, getting a haircut.
You're not doing anything, you're just sitting there.
You can do that on Shabbos too then, why not? No. You can't do that. Calls a non-Jew doing something for you is also, you know. So haircuts and laundry on Chol HaMoed are the prohibitions, and those are the central prohibitions of Chol HaMoed. That's why, and the reasons for those, sorry, the reasons for those are special gezeiras. Mm-hmm. Those are gezeiras on Chol HaMoed. Normally, melachot are prohibited on Chol HaMoed unless they serve some purpose. So, for example, to have fun on Chol HaMoed, you want to, you know, go on a family trip so you can drive because you're having a purpose on Chol HaMoed.
Right.
If you lose a lot of money by not going to work, so Chol HaMoed was not designed to make you lose a lot of money, so you're allowed to go to work. You're allowed to wash that. The reason why you're not allowed to do laundry or get a haircut on Chol HaMoed, even though they could potentially serve a purpose on the Moed, is that the rabbis made a gzeira lest you not do your laundry or not get a haircut in preparation for the Yom Tov. Meaning, in order to make sure everybody looked their best for the first days of Yom Tov, they wanted you to get a haircut and shave, you know, for men to trim their beards, because they didn't shave back then, they trimmed their beards. So, and also in order to make sure you had all your laundry ready before, so you did everything to be nice for Yom Tov, to make sure that was the case, they made a gzeira that you're not allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed. So you don't say, it's Friday and the Seder is tonight and I forgot to get a haircut, I'll just get a haircut on Monday. So no, you got to get your haircut before Yom Tov to prepare properly for Yom Tov. So there are special dispensations for things that get dirty quickly, like baby clothing and bathroom towels and, you know, a tablecloth. Those things, and undergarments also, if people didn't used to have, you know, today people have enough undergarments to last them a week and a half. But in those days, they had a few undergarments. So really it means no dry cleaning and no cleaning, you know, no laundry.
What's so interesting, though, is that the whole concept of doing laundry is so different today.
Yeah.
That it's amazing that there hasn't been a different thinking about this.
Right. I mean, I think it's just because not doing laundry for a week is so easy now,
right,
that nobody cares. There's no push for it because everybody has enough. Most people, unless you're, I mean, look, for a baby, you can never have enough onesies,
right,
and whatever. They get it dirty.
So
we had to do.
Dirty, and what are you gonna do?
Exactly.
Wash it, right?
That's right. So you could do baby laundry on Chol HaMoed, and other things like that. You know, if there are special kinds of things that have to get washed, they have to get washed. But general laundry you're not supposed to do. And also there's debate about men shaving on Chol HaMoed. So the traditional interpretation is that you're not allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed either. Rav Lichtenstein was famous for saying that the opposite is true. You should shave more on Chol HaMoed. Because the whole point is Shelo Yikanes Menuval Lachag. On Yom Tov, you shouldn't look like you're an Avelis. That's why they wanted you to make sure you got a haircut before Yom Tov, so you wouldn't look disheveled on Yom Tov. So Rav Lichtenstein says, well, nowadays, not everybody has a beard now. Nowadays, people shave. And if you last even one day not clean shaven, then you look like you're an Avelis. You look sloppy. Sloppy is a different example. This is an Avelis. You don't want to look like you're an Avelis on the Chag. So Rav Lichtenstein said you should shave every day of Chol HaMoed to make sure you never look like you're an Avelis, to maintain the...
But that's
to maintain the appearance. It caught on in the Rav Lichtenstein world.
But none of that applies to for Pesach with the Sfira, right?
No. Of course it applies to Pesach. Chol HaMoed overrides Sfira HaOmer. You can go to, look, there's Chol HaMoed, you can go to theater and concerts. I saw a play on Chol HaMoed.
Yeah, but I'm saying about shaving a Sfira beard?
No, the Sfira beard doesn't begin. The days of Chol HaMoed, people who don't shave, it's not because of Sfira, it's because not supposed to shave on Chol HaMoed, and they don't hold of the Rav Lichtenstein thing. But for example, when I didn't have a beard, I shaved every day of Chol HaMoed, even Sukkot and Pesach.
So when does the Sfira beard begin?
After Yom Tov, yeah. Okay. After Yom Tov. No, you're not allowed to have a velus. Sfira is a velus, and you can't have a velus on the Moed. If you have real velus, you don't have a velus on the Moed. So Kal Vachomer, this minhag of Sfira HaOmer. You count Sfira, but the counting of the Sfira as a mitzvah is separate from the customs of Avelis. The reason why there are customs of Avelis, Sfira HaOmer is a biblical commandment. You have to count the Omer because it's in the Torah. But the minhagim of Avelis is because the students of Rabbi Akiva died.
Oh, that was rabbinic.
And it's a separate custom. Okay. One more, and then Yud Gimel, the Rambam writes what everybody else said, that it's you might come to do a malacha. So the first thing in the Rambam, it's funny. The Rambam has it flipped from what you would have thought. Yud Gimel is ve'od k'shevaker v'yataltel kelim shemelachatan le'isor efshar she'itasek by a me'at ve'avo le'idei melacha. Right? And Yud Gimel, the Rambam says what everybody said here, that you might come to do a malacha if you touch muktzah. Oh, and here's another. So that's the second reason. The first reason is that you'll be bored on Shabbos afternoon, and you'll end up not resting on Shabbos. So it makes sure that you rest on Shabbos. The second reason is lest you come to do a malacha. And here's the third reason. Look, that's only one line. He gives a whole paragraph about the first one, and one line about that you might come to do a malacha. So you see, Shlomit, the snow is not. It's not all about the malacha. Only one of the three reasons is because of the malacha. Finally, ve'od mipnei shemiktzat ha'am einam ba'alayu maniyot. Many people don't really have skilled jobs. Umaniyot is skilled jobs. Ela b'teilin kol yemehen. But rather they sit.
They while away their days.
Exactly. Kagon tayalin, they travel around. Ve'yoshvei kranot, and the ones who sit in the street corner. Exactly. Shekol yameihen hem shovtin b'malacha. Because every day they don't do malacha. V'im yeh mutar lehalech u'ledaber u'letaltel. And if it was permitted to walk around and to talk anything you wanted to talk about and to carry and handle anything you wanted to carry. K'she'ar hayamim nimtza shelosh shabbat shvita hanikaret. Shelosh shavat shvita hanikaret. That they didn't rest a recognizable resting of Shabbos.
I don't get this. What's the logic here?
The logic is that there are people that don't work. And so every day is like Shabbos
around.
For them.
Yeah, right. And so for those people... Most people.
Miktzat ha'am.
Oh, miktzat, part of the nation.
Yeah, part of the nation.
So for those people, what?
So those people...
They wish they're resting during the week when they do nothing from their resting on Shabbos.
By the way, this refers to many... Many people today... Think about it this way. Many people today don't really need to do malacha to perform their jobs. Technical malacha. Very few people are slaughtering cows and trapping animals. People water their plants if they garden, but you don't have to garden. You could take the subway to work every day. You didn't do malacha, so you swipe the Metro card. That's not, it's not allowed, but it's not really malacha. You got to work. You did everything electronically. There was no malacha done. You just, You didn't exchange any real money. You didn't sign any contracts that day. So you could really go to work and not really do any malachas on that day that you went to work. So that's, even though in the Rambam's day, there was no such thing as going to work and not doing malacha. But really, you could go to work and not do malacha. You could walk to work. You could really get away. You could figure out a way to go to work and not do malacha. And so the Rambam says, that's why there's muktzah. Because there's very little way to get out of muktzah. I can't pick up my phone. So now that, imagine if I could pick up my phone on Shabbos. The only reason I can't put my phone in my pocket is because of muktzah. So were there no muktzah, then for many people living in the 21st century, Shabbos would be very, very different. Muktzah is one of the central aspects of Shabbos for many people in the 21st century.
The concept of muktzah... means is this an absolute concept that you can't touch it, or is it all dependent upon the use? We said these different ways that you use it makes it muksa. So in other words, the pen, I'm allowed to touch it. It's not muksa per se, if depending upon whether I stick it in the book.
So it depends on the category of muksa into which the object falls.
Okay.
If it's a klisha melachtola isser, as we discussed, then it depends on the use of the object. But if it's an object that's muktza mechamat gufo, if it's objective muktza, like a rock or like a coin or something like that.
Why is a rock objectively muktza?
Because it has no use on Shabbos. Rock, dirt, coins, those are objective muktza. All muktza at some level is subjective, because if you set it aside from before Shabbos, then it's not muktza anymore. It's mukhan. That's why, if somebody asked me actually just a few weeks ago at Shul at Kiddush, why is this, you know, the Shabbos lamp that you turn the thing? Why isn't that muktza? The reason why it's not muktza is because it's called a Shabbos lamp. It's meant for Shabbos, so it's not muktza by definition. It's mukhan. It's meant, even though it's electronic and whatever, and you're picking up a lamp, and the same lamp that's by the wall, you're not allowed to pick up and move, because that's muktza. But this lamp is the Shabbos lamp. It's
you're
meant.
You're allowed to move it on Shabbat?
What, the Shabbos lamp?
Yeah.
You have to.
No, other than that. Oh, I see it. Okay, yeah. Never mind.
Yeah. You have to pick up the lamp and move. That's what you're picking
up.
Oh, you're turning the top. That's right. You're not picking up the lamp. That's right. Plus, even if you were picking up the lamp, it would be allowed, because it's the Shabbos lamp. It's meant for Shabbos. That's what it's for. They must prepare their rocks in advance. That's right.
What about the Shabbos
lamp? So the Shabbos lamp, do you have to have a little light coming out of it? Or you can have it in the completely dark mode and you can turn it to the light mode.
No, you can have it completely dark, yeah.
So why isn't that like no light? It was dark, now it's light.
No, because the light's there. It's just inside the thing. Also, light is not an object. Light's not it's not an object. It's an ambiance.
So then snow and...
Snow is an object.
Snow is ambiance too?
Yeah. You could pick up snow with your hands.
Well, so subjective.
Okay. Let's begin the Gemara so we could say we began the Gemara.
My son got his PhD in physics. They actually stopped light. She's going to get a Nobel Prize. They stopped light and sent it on its way, and that made it.
Oh, wow.
It could have been a
Nobel. Yeah, I know. Modern physics doesn't work with halacha.
I know. Because that would have made the light a nola. Because if you can...
Object,
that's right. You can stop light.
But the light inside the box, it's not off.
It's an existing light.
Right. Okay, let's read the Gemara. The Mishnah has three cases. The only thing that unites these three cases is that they are kulas of Beit Shammai and chumras of Beit Hillel. Meaning normally we expect Hillel to be lenient and Shammai to be stringent. But these three cases are three of... There are more cases like this. But these three cases are kulas of Beit Shammai and chumras of Beit Hillel. We still passing like Beit Hillel. You don't find a kula and keep it. We still go with Beit Hillel. Okay. Beitza shenolda beYom Tov. An egg which is born on Yom Tov. Beit Shammai omrim te'achel. Beit Shammai says you're allowed to eat it. Uveit Hillel omrim lo te'achel. Beis Hillel says, you're not allowed to eat it. Okay? That's because of the prohibition of nolad. And they're going to discuss in a moment, why does Shammai say it's okay, and why does Beit Hillel say it's not okay. That's going to be the Gemara. Beit Shammai, we'll read the next two halachot, because they're in the Mishnah, but they're not really going to be our topic for now. Beit Shammai omrim. Oh, so there's, you know that on Pesach, I don't want to talk about Pesach, but we're stuck because the Mishnah has it. On Pesach, you're not allowed to have bal yira'eh uval yematzeh. You're not allowed to have in your possession neither chametz nor se'or. What's se'or?
Rye.
Sourdough. It's the starter. It's that which can become bread. So according to Beit Shammai, there is a different amount, and you know that in halacha there's minimal shiurim. Biblically, you're only transgressing a prohibition if you had a minimal amount of chametz, like a kezayit of chametz, right? Mm-hmm. If you own less than a kazayit of chametz, then you biblically did not transgress. Rabbinically, you did, because rabbinically, it's chametz is not batel at all. It's a kol shu, any little amount. But biblically, you need a kazayit of chametz. But there's a difference of opinion. Beit Shammai omrim seor bekazayit, v'chametz bekechotevet. Beit Shammai says that starter, the minimal amount, is the size of an olive. And chametz, the minimal amount, is the size of a date, which is larger than an olive. This is evidence, by the way, that dates are larger than olives, even then. Kotevet is a date, tamar. Beit Hillel omrim zeve zebe kezayet. We don't have the date. Beit Hillel says, both of them, the minimal amount, is an olive size. So that's what we hold. Hashochet, this is the third halacha now. You know that if you shecht a wild animal or a bird, there's a mitzvah which follows the shechita, which is called kisui hadam. You're supposed to cover the blood of the animal with dirt. It does not apply for domesticated animals, so cows, sheep, doesn't apply. But wild animals like deer and birds, it applies. So what happens? But we already know that dirt is muktzeh machmat gufo. So are you allowed to do... So on Yom Tov, when you're allowed to shecht, do you do kisui hadam? Hashochet chaya ve'of, b'yom tov, Beit Shammai omrim yachpor b'deker v'yechaseh. If you shecht on Yom Tov, a chicken or a wild animal, Beit Shammai says you can dig some dirt out and do the mitzvah of kisui hadam. Beit Hillel omrim lo yishchot ela im kein ayalo afar muchan mibeod yom. Beit Hillel says you should not shecht it unless you prepare dirt for the mitzvah of kisui hadam from beforehand. Umodim sheim shachat, but even Beit Hillel agrees that if he did shecht it, the dieved, sheichpor b'deker v'yechaseh, that he's allowed to dig and do the mitzvah of kisui hadam.
What's deker?
No, deker is the shovel. Deker is the shovel. Shefar kira muchanu, because dirt from a kira is considered muchan.
And by regards to kisui hadam, they only disagree lechatchila, but b'diavad they both agree you should do kisui hadam.
The question is lechatchila, should you shecht the animal or not? Beit Shammai says you don't need any special thing. Okay. The ashes from a stove. Right, that's an aleph, and a far that's dirt is with an ayin.
This is an aleph. I see. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I wanted to do the first toast flip, but we won't do it. You know, it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay. This is fun.